Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Which players do you need to draft in the late rounds? Let's talk to the pros. Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. My name is Ryan Wormley. I am filling in for Joey P today, and joining me are a couple of the best experts in the industry. I'll start off with our guest, Marcus Grant, fantasy analyst from NFL Media. Marcus, thank you so much for coming on the show. How are you doing?
I'm good. I appreciate you guys having me on. I've been sort of in a little bit of a fantasy hibernation for the last couple of weeks because it's the last chance to sort of do that before things start for real. So I'm just kind of coming out of my own little personal cave and kind of getting back into the world again.
Yeah, we're recording the show on a Friday, and every Friday at this point in the summer is just, okay, that's another week down. We're one more week closer to the onslaught of fantasy goodness we have coming. Of course, I'm also joined by Fantasy Pros' own Pat Fitzmaurice. Pat, how are you doing on this Friday?
I'm doing great, Ryan. It's great to talk to you. And it's an honor to be on with Marcus, who's not only a super sharp analyst, but one of the nicest guys in the fantasy space. And get this. Hey, University of Wisconsin guy here. Ryan, you're a Maryland guy. Marcus went to USC. Big Ten brethren, baby.
That's weird.
I mean, and it's just
weird to say, right?
I mean, geographically, we're practically next door neighbors. It's like
right.
the first time USC goes to College Park, Maryland. I mean, do they even have to charter a plane? That's an easy bus trip.
Oh, it's totally. Everybody's going to just gas up and we'll just drive on over to College Park. It'll be fine. Yeah.
What's this like for you, Marcus? I mean, you've been a Pac-12 guy all your life and all of a sudden, is it strange?
It's very strange. It's where I have to sort of separate the intellectual from the emotional. Like the intellectually, I understand the move, right? The Pac-12 had sort of been vomiting on its own shoes for a while in terms of, you know, national recognition and competitiveness and everything else. So I understand from that perspective why USC and UCLA are making the move. But emotionally, I'm going to miss the Pac-12. I'm going to miss the regional rivalries. Like, I'm sad that we lose Stanford, at least for now, just because, you know, for as much as we dislike UCLA, and trust me, you know, if UCLA could lose every game in every sport for a full calendar year, it'd be the best year of my life. There's no school we've actually played more in football than Stanford. And so to lose that, really, you know, it's a big deal. And, you know, even though, You know, Oregon State's not a huge rival, but, you know, every USC fan can tell you that every couple of years we seem to play a Thursday night game up in Corvallis where it's foggy and it might be raining and it's sloppy. And no matter what the records are or the rankings are, you know, we could be number one in the country and there's a chance we can go up to Corvallis and lose like 13-6 just because it always seems to happen. And those are the things that sort of build those rivalries and forge those bonds. Honestly, I have nothing against either of your schools. And that's sort of the problem for me, right? Like, I can't get emotionally charged up about playing Maryland. In fact, I looked, Ryan, I don't think USC and Maryland have ever played in football ever in their respective histories.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I just, you know, like, there'll be a novelty to it. But after a couple of years when the novelty wears off, it's like, I can't get emotionally fired up about hating the Terps. There's just, you know, I'm just sort of indifferent. So I have to sort of build that, and it's going to take a while.
Well, legendary Maryland basketball coach Lefty Driesell once said that he wanted Maryland to be the UCLA of the East. So maybe you'll grow to hate us one day if we really are the UCLA of the East. As always, I want to make sure the listeners can find the three of us online. Pat's Twitter handle is at Fitz_FF. Marcus is at Marcus G, and I can be found at Ryan Warmly. And of course, we can be found everywhere online at Fantasy Pros. I also want to mention our all-new 2022 Fantasy Football Draft Kit, which can be found at fantasypros.com/kit. It's got rankings from each of our analysts, ADP information, player profiles, position primers, all sorts of draft and strategy guides to help you dominate draft day. A ton of the content is free, but if you want to get everything the Draft Kit has to offer, you do need to become a subscriber. So go premium today if you haven't already, and head to our Fantasy Football Draft Kit at fantasypros.com/kit. And oh, by the way, if you're not a premium subscriber just yet, we've got an amazing deal going on right now that allows you to go premium for 12 months without paying a dime. Just head over to fantasypros.com/offers to claim that deal now. Again, that's fantasypros.com/offers. Fellas, let's jump right into some player names here. Today, we're talking about some late round must-have guys. Hopefully, we can hit on some names for both shallower and deeper leagues. The ADP numbers that you guys hear from us today will be coming from our consensus half-point PPR ADP, which can be found over at fantasypros.com/rankings. Marcus, you are our guest, so I will start with you. Who is your must-have running back that's going in between ADP 101 and 200 right now?
For me, it's been Dameon Pierce, and I found myself, you know, taking a lot of shots at Dameon Pierce in kind of the middle to late parts of drafts. I know that when we went through the NFL draft season and everybody was talking about that running back class, Pierce wasn't necessarily a name that was coming up a whole lot. And I get it. Like, you know, he wasn't on par with a Breece Hall or a Kenneth Walker or anybody like that. But I'm also a firm believer in opportunity being a big part of a player's success. You can talk about all the talent in the world, but if you were trapped either in a system that's not going to feature you, or you're trapped on a roster where you're going to be blocked by some other players, that it's hard to really get fired up about what a player can do. So Pierce might not be the most talented running back, but he shows up in Houston where it's wide open in terms of opportunity in that backfield. I mean, last year you had Rex Burkhead, who led that team in touches. You have a weird thing, and I'd have to go back and see how long it was after they moved on from Mark Ingram. He still led that team in carries for a good long while, which kind of tells you about how scattered that backfield was. So I don't know if Pierce is going to be the starter right at the beginning, but I do think a few weeks into it, they're going to turn to him and say, look, we want to see what this kid can do. We are definitely still, you know, a ways away from being a contender, even within our own division. So I think there's a real opportunity for him there. Right now, I know his ADP is right around 130. So I think if you're talking about adding him as depth, you're not obviously counting on him to carry your team on a weekly basis. But I think the opportunity is going to present itself for him to really get a lot of touches. And he could end up being a really nice depth add for you somewhere down the line.
Yeah, definitely a guy who showed some stuff at Florida. And worst case scenario, seems like a pretty obvious volume play right now. He's going 50th among running backs. Where would you have him ranked at the position?
That seems a little low. I mean, I don't know if I'd go much higher. I say this is a little low, but then I'm like, I don't know, maybe 40, 45. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I'm bumping him way up the list. But I think just it's a risk versus reward thing where the risk is, I think, fairly minimal. And if he does turn out to get that volume, I think the reward is a lot bigger.
Well, Pat, Marcus picked a volume play at running back. You picked a running back in an offense that we never know who's going to get what kind of volume week in and week out.
Yeah, the ever maddening New England Patriots backfield. So I like Ramondre Stevenson, and maybe not a late round guy. He's probably going to go in the middle round somewhere. I think his ADP is just over 100 overall. 231 pounds with nifty feet. That's a pretty good start for him. And we know he got into the doghouse last year by, I think, fumbling on either his first or second NFL touch and was probably a healthy scratch for the next three games. But over the last 11 regular season games, after working his way into Bill Belichick's good graces again, he averaged 12 carries a game. And, you know, Damian Harris was playing in most of those games. So, yes, a guy who's the backup to a guy who scored 15 touchdowns last season might not seem like a good bet, but I know my guy Joe Dolan told me on my podcast that he had just talked to Andrew Callahan, the beat writer for the Boston Herald, who predicted that Ramondre Stevenson was going to overtake Damian Harris at some point this season. So, you know, not only is Stevenson a big dude, he can catch passes. Only had, I think, 14 receptions last year for the Patriots, but in his final year at Oklahoma, averaged 3 catches a game and 11.7 yards per catch. So if James White hasn't made a full recovery from his hip injury last year, and there have been reports that maybe he hasn't, Stevenson could potentially slot in as a very large passing down back. So I'm really intrigued here by the possibilities.
Stevenson's currently 37th in ADP among running backs. If you were to know for sure that he doesn't actually overtake Harris, he still has a similar role to what we saw in the back half of last year, would you still be comfortable taking him in that range?
Yeah, low 30s for me, even assuming that he's probably going to be slotted in as the backup, but really kind of more of a 1B in that committee.
Let's look at some deeper leagues here. Move to must-have running backs with an overall ADP greater than 200. Marcus, I'll start with you again.
Well, I'll go just past that cutoff at 202. And Tyrion Davis-Price, the rookie the Niners drafted late this past year. I've been on record as saying I just have this feeling that at some point during the fantasy season, he's going to become relevant because that just seems to be the way the Niners backfield rolls. Now, I've seen reports that were coming out earlier on Friday about Kyle Shanahan saying they may move to more of a committee approach in their backfield. Although I'm still sort of stung by Kyle Shanahan being the king of the smokescreen by letting us all think he was going to take Mac Jones at 3, you know, a couple of years ago, and then, you know, pulling the rug out from underneath us and taking Trey Lance. I shouldn't say that. As a 49er fan, I think I was happier of them taking Lance than taking Mac Jones. So I think I'm okay with that. But I still think Elijah Mitchell is the number one running back there. And I think the battle is going to be for who's getting those opportunities behind him. I could see it early on being Jeff Wilson, but I wouldn't be surprised if at some point, you know, in redraft leagues, I think we'll be talking about Davis Price as being a guy you might want to get off the waiver wire, maybe a stash and hold. If you're playing in deep leagues, he might be a guy to throw that dart at, because we know the Niners like to use a lot of different running backs. The way things have gone, it seems as though all of them, if they get significant time on the field, do make a fantasy impact, all except for Trey Sermon, who apparently is persona non grata in San Francisco. I don't think that's going to happen with Davis Price. And I just think with his skill set, with his ability, having a great offensive head coach, having a good cast around him, a good offensive line, I think things just really open up for him to potentially be fantasy relevant, especially if the guys ahead of him can't fulfill their duties for one reason or another.
Yeah, it's funny. Davis Price really sort of checks both boxes of guys that we've seen in San Francisco before. On the one hand, third round pick. So there's some degree of like, well, they invested a day two pick in this guy. Maybe they want to use him. And we saw that with Trey Sermon, didn't work out. But there's also the effect of like, how many times have we seen the guy that we all thought was going to be the third or fourth running back on this depth chart end up making a real fantasy impact, and the number one guy doesn't? I do like Elijah Mitchell, but I'm totally with you that I think Tyrion Davis-Price is definitely a guy I'd love to try and pick up late wherever I can. He's currently 65th among running backs in ADP. How much higher would you have him there?
I think that's about right. Just because I think, you know, there are still other guys that he has to compete with. I mean, we're hoping he can maybe leapfrog somebody, but there's no guarantee on that. So I think that's about right for me.
Can I ask Marcus a follow-up first?
Of course,
Marcus,
sure.
Do you think as a 49ers fan, there's any chance that we see Trey Sermon come back from the dead, or, you know, do you think he's pretty much toast?
I mean, I think there's a small chance, but I wouldn't hold my breath on that unless something major happens. I think right now his best chance, if he can figure out something on special teams, maybe that's his way to work his way back in. But that feels like a swing and a miss for the Shanahan-John Lynch duo right there.
It does.
I feel like we've mentioned Trey Sermon's name too many times already in this podcast. Pat, who's your guy?
My guy's D'Ernest Johnson, and we saw him look terrific whenever he got a chance last season. In his two starts, I think he had 245 rushing yards, 80 receiving yards, and a touchdown. And that doesn't include a 123-yard rushing day in Week 17 with a touchdown. He was actually PFF's highest graded runner last year, and I know it was a little bit of a smaller sample size for D'Ernest than most. But we know there's a logjam in the Cleveland backfield, but maybe that's a good thing for him, because there have been rumors that they might move either Johnson or Kareem Hunt. And if they move Johnson, presumably it's going to be to a running back needy team that would give him immediate opportunity. And if they choose to move Hunt, then all of a sudden Johnson is the number two in a run-heavy offense, or, you know, maybe a run-heavy offense if Deshaun Watson is serving a suspension, behind a really good offensive line. So there are possibilities here. And I mean, no one's going to be interested in D'Ernest Johnson when he's number three on the depth chart, but there's a very good chance he's higher on a depth chart, if not the Browns, then maybe someone else's.
Even if he became the clear backup, does it concern you? I mean, yes, they would be run heavy if Deshaun is not playing, and maybe even if he is playing. But I mean, it's obvious that he's going to be suspended in some degree. With him not in that offense, do you worry about you're now taking a backup running back in an offense that you don't expect to score a lot of points?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it would definitely reduce the touchdown expectations a little bit. So can't say that it would be a great thing for him to inherit that role when someone other than Watson was quarterbacking the Browns. But still, there might be, you know, at least there would be opportunity there for him to get some touches.
But Pat, he sent out a tweet yesterday saying, you know, basically doubting, you know, or getting mad at all the haters who's doubting him, and he's grinding. So that counts for something. Ooh, right?
Yes. Right. All right. Let me write this down. J.K. Dobbins and D'Ernest Johnson.
The first running back to ever grind over the offseason.
They're fighting back at all the haters and they're grinding.
Yes. So that, you know. Get the angry preseason running backs.
Pat, before I move on, he is 69th at ADP among running backs right now. Where would you have him?
Maybe just a tick higher than that. I mean, that's pretty close. But first of all, like, he's probably not going to be drafted in conventional drafts. It would have to be a really deep draft. You know, maybe just one of those guys to have in your speed dial for the waiver wire early in the season.
Before we move on with today's show, I'd like to take a moment to talk to you about Buffalo Wild Wings. The absolute best place to host your fantasy draft this year is at Buffalo Wild Wings. Book in advance on buffalowildwings.com/fantasy. There, you'll get half off on all bar food appetizers during your draft party. Nachos, buffalo chicken tots, everything pretzel knots, mozzarella sticks, fried pickles, and so much more. Buffalo Wild Wings always has great deals on beers, $3 tall house beers, $4 domestic beer of the month, $5 craft beer. I can't imagine eating wings without a cold PBR in my hand. And this year, Buffalo Wild Wings is putting league losers on the hot seat. The first 20 draft parties at each Buffalo Wild Wings location will get a fantasy football punishment pack. It comes with everything you need to punish last year's loser and kick off your draft the right way. 6 free boneless wings with their hottest blazing sauce, a bib to wear that says last place in big letters so the whole bar will know just how bad they are at fantasy football, a certificate of underachievement that's worthy of being framed, free coupons for the whole league to come back during football season. So don't forget to book in advance on buffalowildwings.com/fantasy because spots will fill up fast. Marcus, for our must-have wide receiver in between ADP 101 and 200, you've got yet another rookie.
Yeah, I promise that my list is not all rookies. It just happened to work out like that early on. It's Drake London, and not just because I'm a USC homer, but because I do think that, again, you talk about opportunity. This is a really nice marriage for me of talent and opportunity. A guy who sits now in an offense that, you know, not all that long ago, the Falcons offense featured Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, and Calvin Ridley. Now it has none of those guys. And so they, I think, are going to rely very heavily on Kyle Pitts and Drake London. And London's skill set, I think, fits in really well with Marcus Mariota at quarterback. Mariota, not known for a guy who's going to take a lot of shots down the field. He's going to work kind of the intermediate part of the field. And really, he will succeed if his receivers can do things after the catch. And that was a thing that London did very well at USC before he got injured. You know, hopefully he's had time to kind of get healthy and everything. You know, these young kids, they can heal up a little bit faster too. But I think if they can kind of use him in space, let him use his ball skills and use his ability after the catch to kind of make some plays. And then obviously they've got Kyle Pitts sort of on the other side there to make them some bigger plays down the field. I just see a ton of targets coming for Drake London this year. And honestly, I'm a little bit surprised that he's sort of hanging around, that his ADP is where it is. Maybe that's just because wide receiver is so deep now. I'm not sure. But it just feels like he walks into a bigger target share, certainly than a lot of the other rookies, but even more than a lot of the other veterans that are going ahead of him in drafts right now. So I love him where I can get him. I'm trying to draft him in as many spots as I can, because for me, I think he's going to end up being maybe the highest scoring rookie. Certainly the highest scoring rookie wide receiver, but maybe the highest scoring rookie overall, just because I think things just lined up really well for him this year.
London is currently 43rd among wide receivers in ADP. Is there, obviously we're not expecting like a Ja'Marr Chase rookie season out of right. him, but is there a recent rookie season that you think Drake London, you would most compare to their fantasy impact you expect this year?
Ooh, that's a good question. I gotta think about it, because I feel like rookies have been, the bar has been set so high recently. Yeah. I mean, between Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, you know, you go back to Odell Beckham and what he did as a rookie. I think the bar has been set really, really high. So I'm trying to think of some guys that recently would stand out. But I still think, like I said, I think right now his ceiling probably is, I'd say maybe a fringe wide receiver two, probably more likely a wide receiver three. But again, I think he's a guy that you could use as a flex on a consistent basis and feel fairly happy about it.
Pat, who's your wide receiver in this range?
So it's Kadarius Toney, and I am just kind of smitten with him after what we saw from him in weeks 4 and 5 last year. He first kind of burst onto the scene in week 4 with 6 catches for 78 yards against the Saints. And then he just went berserk the next week against the Cowboys, 10 catches, 189 yards. And man, just like electrifying with the ball in his hands. He is a wow player. Like, he is just this springy, twitchy athlete. Really exciting to watch. But 2021 was really kind of a weird season for him. He missed most of training camp with a hamstring injury. And then later in the season, he dealt with ankle, quad, oblique injuries. I think he might have also had COVID at some point, if I'm remembering correctly. I guess the fear is that he might be like another Percy Harvin, who's, you know, this electrifying stick of dynamite on the field whose body just can't withstand the rigors of the NFL for whatever reason. The physiology just doesn't cooperate. But man, like, if we can get that little bottle of what we saw in Toney in weeks 4 and 5 last year and get that spread over a whole season, oh, that would be just chef's kiss.
Pat, I can't let you get away with mentioning his stat line in weeks 4 and 5 and not these other numbers he had every time he played. And yes, there was the injuries and things like that, but here are his receiving totals in every other game. -2 yards, 16, 36, 26, 9, 40, and 28. So those 2 weeks are really the only ones. There's a lot of underlying metrics that a lot of really smart analysts are really excited about with him and expecting big things. Obviously, there's a new offense in New York as well, but are you at all concerned about the fact that for the large percentage of the season, he wasn't just not as good as we saw in those weeks, he was downright awful?
Yeah, I mean, some of those were abbreviated snap counts, I think.
Sure.
At least a few. And, you know, we know the offense wasn't in that great a place with Daniel Jones running an offense designed by Jason Garrett and Freddie Kitchens. So there were some underlying issues there for sure. But I think, you know, health was probably still the biggest reason that he didn't fully take hold last season. And, you know, I'm hoping the health cooperates. I'm really anxious to see what's going to happen with the Brian Daboll offense. But, you know, admittedly, it's a problem that he's a short area receiver who does a lot of his work over the middle. And, you know, that kind of a role sort of leaves you open to taking a lot of hits. And, you know, the injury risk might be elevated for that type of a receiver.
Toney certainly has the pedigree, first round pick. He's going 46th. Among wide receivers right now. Marcus, who is your must-have receiver that's going later?
I do love the Toney pick because I'm also on board with him. I think if he can stay healthy and not be his own worst enemy, I think he'll be fine. Also, to answer your question about rookie wide receivers, I think a CeeDee Lamb type rookie season, you know, maybe close to 1,000 yards, something like that. I think that's legit for Drake London in his first year.
I think people
year.
Would definitely take that.
Right. I think you're fine with that. Yeah. But as for this one, I've really started to kind of cling to Josh Palmer with the Chargers. I feel like we want as many parts of the Charger offense as we can get. I mean, obviously we love Justin Herbert, you know, Keenan Allen. It's weird. Keenan Allen to me is perpetually underrated. He's that guy that everybody looks at and they're like, eh, it's Keenan Allen. And I'm like, what's wrong with 1,100 yards and like eight touchdowns? Like, that seems cool to me. But I do think we're going to see more of Josh Palmer as the season progresses. I think last year we started to see late in the year where he was starting to get more opportunity. He was starting to get more targets. Maybe the yardage totals weren't what we wanted them to be, but the opportunity was there for him. So I think there's a chance for him to kind of take a big step forward. I would love to see the Chargers run, you know, more three wide receiver sets, that sort of thing this year. But I think, again, because wide receiver is so deep, I think you can kind of take shots on guys with upside, guys in high powered offenses. The Chargers already score a lot. Now they're in a division that is super loaded, right? I mean, you know, every single week in that division, you got to deal with the Chiefs, the Raiders, you know, adding Devontae Adams. You've got the Broncos now with Russell Wilson and his group of wide receivers. So you're going to see a lot of track meets, I think, in AFC West games. And I think that bodes well for Josh Palmer. So I would love to have him again as sort of a depth add, and really hope that here in the second year, he can take a big step forward and be a guy who's a lot more of a contributor, both for the Chargers and for your fantasy squad.
Yeah, the obvious question there is about just like, are there too many mouths to feed in this offense? But you're right, the Chargers are such a perfect team to run more three wide receiver sets. It would be really aggravating if they didn't. And obviously we know Palmer's really talented. 72nd in ADP right now among receivers. Where would you have him ranked?
I mean, I'd probably move him up a little bit, but again, I think that's sort of about right. Just because, look, there are a lot of mouths to feed. There are a lot of unknowns about this, but you know, I'm willing to kind of take that shot, make that dart throw at him later in drafts and see if he is able to develop into something.
Pat, your receiver is also coming from a very strong offense.
Yeah, and it's kind of in the same vein as Marcus's selection. Like, we talk about handcuff running backs a lot in fantasy football. And like my guy Rich Rebar of Sharp Football has talked a little bit about handcuff wide receivers and how maybe people don't pay attention to that. Like, Josh Palmer is the third receiver in an explosive offense. Like, if anything happens to Keenan Allen or Mike Williams, people are going to be clawing past each other to get Josh Palmer off waivers this year in fantasy football, because he's probably not going to go in the typical 12-team, 16-round draft. But, you know, like, Palmer might have a little bit of standalone value, and if something happens to one of those guys, look out, like, his stock soars. And I think it might be the same for Cedric Wilson. Not quite in as explosive an offense, but, you know, the Dolphins offense with Mike McDaniel could certainly be a little more compelling this year. And Wilson just, he had two fantastic seasons at Boise State, just eye-popping numbers, over 1,500 yards his last year after starting off at a community college. And he really kind of popped whenever he got the chance in Dallas. Last year, he had 100-yard games in two of the Cowboys' last seven games, and I think he scored three touchdowns in their last two games. So he's done, whenever he's gotten the opportunity, 9.9 yards per target last year, six touchdowns on only 61 targets. Like, he's got some playmaking ability, and if anything were to happen to either Tyreek Hill or Jaylen Waddle, not the biggest guys, all of a sudden, Cedric Wilson is playing like 80 or 90% of the snaps every week in, you know, what should be an improved offense.
Just quickly, do you buy into Tua, you know, taking the step forward and being able to provide multiple fantasy relevant receivers?
I mean, I'm cautiously pro Tua. Like, I think he's maybe a better thrower of the football than he gets credit for. But, you know, I'm a little, I don't know, I guess I'm taking a real cautious step forward on that, just sort of dipping the toe in the water. I have not been getting him a lot in best ball drafts yet.
To most famously known as the older brother of Maryland quarterback Talia Tagovailoa. Before we move on with the show, I'd like to take a moment to talk to everyone about Pristine Auction. PristineAuction.com is the most trusted sports memorabilia site with an A+ Better Business Bureau rating. Auctions on PristineAuction.com start at just $1, and each day there are over 1,000 autographed items available, so you win signed, authentic signatures at affordable prices. Just last week, an autographed Justin Herbert jersey sold for $110. Deals like this are happening all the time on PristineAuction.com, and they have just about every player you could want, including Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, and so much more. Every item on PristineAuction.com comes with a certificate of authenticity from the industry's most reputable authenticators. Upgrade your collection of signed memorabilia today and get $10 off your first item one when you use code FANTASYPROS. That's one word. Be sure to sign up now because there are deals ending every day. Again, that's code FANTASYPROS for $10 off your first piece of signed memorabilia on pristineauction.com. Let's move to a must-have, either QB or tight end. You guys can pick which position you want to go with. Marcus, again, starting with you, between ADP 101 and 200.
I have been going with Albert Okoye-Bunam recently. You know, it's funny because when I saw this list, I was torn. I've been torn between he and Irv Smith, but I think I've sort of more trended toward Albert O, just because I think we've all believed or all are believing that the rising tide that is Russell Wilson will lift a lot of the boats in that Denver offense. I mean, you know, I'm excited about Courtland Sutton. I know people are excited about Jerry Jeudy, but I also think there was a reason for so many years that we kept trying to make Will Disley a thing in Seattle, because they were really getting him involved, especially down near the goal line. And I think now you take a guy who, when it comes to his athletic testing and the folks who love, you know, athletic testing metrics and spark scores and all those sort of things, Albert O was a darling in all of those things. So you're taking a guy who's incredibly athletic. You're giving him a quarterback that likes to get the tight end involved. I think there's really a big chance for him to do some things. And I know, you know, there were a story recently that the Broncos really like Greg Dulcich, the tight end out of UCLA that they drafted. But you go back and the Broncos ran a lot of 12 personnel. They had a lot of situations where they had two tight ends on the field. So that sort of calmed any fears I had that I could see them running both those guys out there on the field a lot, that they could give Albert a lot of opportunities, a lot of targets, and hopefully his athleticism sort of takes over there, especially if you've got, you know, guys like Sutton and Jeudy taking so much attention. Maybe that opens some things up for Albert O. And I think if you are the kind of person who likes to draft a second tight end, I think he's a really good opportunity later in the drafts to kind of, you know, be that streamer, that injury fill-in, that bye week fill-in that I think is going to pay a lot of dividends.
Yeah, Albert O, currently 18th in ADP at the position. In our expert consensus rankings, he's actually down at 22nd, so even lower than he's currently going. And that's interesting to me because when the trade first happened, and especially when everybody found out that Noah Fant was leaving Denver, Albert O was like the most popular guy on every breakout sleepers list you could find. And that hype has definitely, you know, gone down a bit. Is it just the fact that the Broncos drafted a tight end that they supposedly really like, or is there some other reason why you think that hype has faded a bit?
No, I think it's the Dulcich factor mostly, because he was sort of everybody's favorite fantasy tight end in this draft class. You know, I think in a lot of ways it sort of feels like when they drafted Javonte Williams, right? We all love Javonte Williams, and he goes to Denver and we're like, oh, now he has to share with Melvin Gordon. And, you know, that sort of threw a little cold water on it. And I think sort of similarly, Dulcich going to Denver throws a little bit of cold water on the fire that was building for Albert O.
Look at Marcus staying on brand, just waving off the UCLA tight end as a threat to his guy.
of course. Pat, who's your pick in this range?
This feels like cheating, but it's Trey Lance, since he just barely snuck in to the threshold for ADP. And everyone is kind of excited about Trey Lance, or about Jalen Hurts for this year and paying full price for him. He was like the best buy, I think, at the quarterback position last year. I think rather than pay full price this year, people should be looking at getting this year's version of Jalen Hurts. And Lance is probably that guy. And, you know, I can't wait to hear what Marcus thinks about him after I say a few words, but like it's the running ability. I mean, he is a fantastic runner and he does not hesitate to use his legs. He ran 24 times in 2 starts last year. And we don't know what we're going to see out of him as a passer, although you certainly like the weapons with Debo and Kittle and Ayuk. No doubt, like, he's going to be confused by some of the things he sees in his first time around the NFL after, you know, not really facing high-level competition in college. But maybe that's good for fantasy because, you know, if a guy that mobile gets confused, he's just going to take off and run. So I think we're going to see Trey Lance run a lot. We know that running quarterbacks are a cheat code in fantasy football. The passing, whatever he gives you in that dimension, is just gravy. So I think he's really excited. I've got him ranked in my top 10 at quarterback.
Yeah, he's currently 14th in ADP, just to let everybody know. And Marcus, you, of course, also picked Trey Lance for one of our categories today. So I know you're a big fan as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love what Pat said about trying to draft him like Jalen Hurts. The problem is, I feel like we're all saying that. So that means we can't, because we have to kind of reach a little bit earlier for him. I remember last year, you know, trying to draft Hurts kind of late in spots. And on one team, for instance, I actually had Dak Prescott and Jalen Hurts, which ended up being more of a headache than I wanted, because both those guys were playing well. And it every week was a conundrum as to who I started. I just feel like because we all are on Trey Lance, that now he's being drafted sort of as a top 10 quarterback, which means we can't really get the discount on him that we like. But everything you said about him, I agree with completely. I mean, the running ability always means he's got a pretty stable floor, you believe, week to week. He's got plenty of help around him. He's got a good offensive-minded head coach. Like, everything, he checks pretty much all of the boxes that we would want out of a fantasy quarterback. And because of that, the ADP is rising a little bit higher than I want it to. This is where I'm sort of hoping that the casual drafters, when they start to come in, maybe kind of depress that a little bit, so that in some other leagues I can sort of get him a little bit later on, because, you know, all you other guys are too smart. And so I can't get him at the ADP I would like.
And that ADP might go even higher after Jimmy G gets traded.
Yeah,
oh, for sure.
That's true.
And Lance is in Pat's top 10. Marcus, where would you have him?
I do have him. I have him like 9. So I guess I'm sort of being hypocritical about my whole little spiel here, but you know, I can wish, right? I can wish cast something like that.
Pat, who's your quarterback or tight end that's going later?
Later guy. I've got Adam Trautman. And so this is the super late guy, and Trautman is pretty much going undrafted in a lot of leagues, but admittedly a slow start to his career with 42 catches in his first two seasons. But we know that it often takes tight ends a year or two to sort of get acclimated. You know, they've got to learn sort of in two dimensions as pass catchers and as blockers. It didn't help that last year, after Jameis Winston got hurt, the quarterbacking situation for the Saints was kind of a nightmare. But man, this guy was a prolific producer in college, granted at small school Dayton, but he has the Dayton school records for receptions in a season with 70, TD catches in a season with 14, career receptions 178, and career touchdown catches 31. Shown at the Senior Bowl. And I don't know, he's going to be the starting tight end. And if Michael Thomas, who just went on the PUP list for training camp, like if he's not ready to go and is not hoovering up all those short area targets, I think a lot of those targets are going to go to Trautman.
Trautman's currently 28th among tight ends, so going way, way late. Where would you have him ranked?
Yeah, I've got him, I think, at like 23 or 24. And, I put my money where my mouth is and drafted him in the Scott Fish Bowl.
Very nice. Marcus, who's your pick here?
I'm going to go Kenny Pickett. I feel like there's a question of who's going to be the starting quarterback in Pittsburgh. It's funny, they went out and they get Mitch Trubisky, and it's like, okay, well, that's going to be their guy. And then they go and they draft Kenny Pickett, and you're like, oh, well, you know, record scratch. Let's see how this goes. And, you know, if you do a tail of the tape on these guys, they're so similar. And I don't think that on paper or even on the field, I don't know that one has a decided advantage over the other. So I think this is going to be a real interesting camp battle to watch. And even if somehow Trubisky wins the gig, how strong will his hold be on that starting job? If Pickett is able to walk in there and take over that starting job, he goes into a pretty nice situation with a lot of good pass catchers, with Deontay Johnson. You know, Chase Claypool, I know, was sort of underwhelming last year, but we've seen his talent when things are right. Pat Freiermuth showed some ability last year. He's got Najee Harris when things maybe break down. They can dump the ball off and let Najee sort of do his thing. So I think, you know, I know in Dynasty, I think he's definitely an interesting sort of name. I think if you're in a deep league, especially if you're in a, you know, a super flex or two quarterback league that's really deep, I think it's sort of worth maybe kind of playing this out and seeing how it goes. I think, you know, you're sort of in a better situation, obviously, the later into the preseason that you're drafting, so we can kind of get a better idea of it. But I think of all the rookie quarterbacks, he's the one that shows up in the best situation in his first year. And I think, you know, again, if he wins that job, I think there's a lot of potential there for him.
Yeah, I'm so curious to see what this offense looks like because not this I'm not joking about tying it into Maryland, but I watched a lot of Matt Canada's offenses at Maryland for the year that he was their interim head coach. There's obviously a ton of motion involved. It's a very different look than what Big Ben likes to run in Pittsburgh for so long. You know, it's just been forever since we've actually seen another quarterback take the reins of this offense that I'm really curious to see what it looks like. Clearly, there's a ton of skill position talent there. Like you mentioned, he's currently 26th at the position. Is that about the range you'd keep him in?
Yeah, that's right. You know, there's so many guys that have more certain situations. I think the uncertainty is sort of what keeps him down. I think if Mike Tomlin comes out in the next few days and says, you know what, we're going to give Kenny the shot, he's our guy, I think you see that ADP jump quite a bit, though.
Let's get a couple rapid fire picks here to wrap things up. Just give me two bonus players, regardless of position, that are going here in the later rounds. Pat, I'll start with you. And I will also say, since I already have the names here, three of the four, shockingly, are Big Ten wide receivers.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, we gave Marcus the chance earlier and he named a Pac-12 wide receiver. So I hate to one up our guest, but I got to go with two Big Ten wideouts here. Jahan Dotson and David Bell. I'm surprised at how little enthusiasm there's been for Dotson, considering that he was drafted 16th overall. It's going to step right in as the number two receiver in Washington opposite Terry McLaurin. And I just really like this guy, man. He's fast. He plays to his timed speed, super competitive for balls, great hands. And he's got that Tyreek Hill thing going where for like a slightly smaller receiver, and he's not tiny. I think he's like 5'11". But he just like wins balls in the air at a ridiculously high rate for a guy who's under 6 feet tall. Like he definitely has the jump ball, my ball mentality. So kind of excited about him. Like I think he's the real deal. And David Bell, man, I mean, that guy just put up numbers at Purdue. And I know, like, I think he's still running the 40 at the combine right now, like hasn't crossed the tape yet. But he's just a player, man. Like he reminds me of Anquan Boldin as a guy who doesn't like time out that well, but get the ball in his hands and he's just tough to tackle, makes himself available to quarterbacks, gets open. I think he's going to be a really good possession receiver for Cleveland.
I swear I didn't go into this planning to mention Maryland all the time, but I was at the Penn State Maryland game when Jahan Dotson went off. And he reminded me, I'm not saying that they're like necessarily the same style or will have the same NFL impact, but he reminded me a lot of when I was at school and Clemson came to town and Sammy Watkins dominated Maryland's secondary. And it's just one of those days where you watch this player and you say, that's a first round NFL pick. I know he wasn't necessarily guaranteed to be that going into the draft, but the one time I watched him in person, he just jumped off the field. It was really impressive to watch. So I definitely think Dotson can make an early impact for sure. Marcus, who are your two rapid fire guys?
Well, yeah, we'll keep the Big Ten theme going with another Purdue guy, and that's Rondale Moore, who I know was underwhelming last year, but I think there's a big opportunity, especially early in the season. You know, we know DeAndre Hopkins is gone for 6 weeks, and yes, they added Marquise Brown, and I do like Zach Ertz, but I think there's going to be plenty of chances for Moore to get some targets, make some plays. I know signs are pointing toward him being their slot receiver right now, especially because I think we can all agree the Andy Isabella experiment is long since over. And so I think there's a chance for Moore really early in the season. If he can establish himself when Nuke comes back, obviously he's going to see a lot of targets, but if Moore can make a mark early in the season, I think he can maintain that role or some semblance of that role, even when Hopkins comes back and they have to figure out how to divvy up those targets a little bit more. The other guy, I guess we're getting away from the Big Ten, is Brian Robinson Jr. there in Washington. And I feel like a lot of stuff has happened with Antonio Gibson's ADP. And I think some of it has had to do with Robinson and what he can do and who he can be. I mean, I've seen some kind of lofty comparisons. I think Adrian Peterson was a comparison I saw for Brian Robinson, and I don't want to put that on the guy, but the fact is they're talking about him as being sort of this bruising between the tackles sort of power runner that Gibson really hasn't been so far. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if we see him really pushing JD McKissick for that number two job there in Washington. And everything the Commanders, formerly known as the football team, has done has really suggested to us that they don't love Antonio Gibson the same way we love Antonio Gibson. So whoever's that second running back is going to get plenty of opportunity. So I think Robinson, especially if he has a good camp, really has a chance to sort of push for that. And I love the potential for him being that goal line back and having some of that touchdown upside.
So for the four guys named, let me give everybody the ADPs. Dotson's currently going 69th among wide receivers. David Bell is going 97th among wide receivers. Rondell Moore is going 64th among wide receivers. And Brian Robinson is going 63rd among running backs.
Let's dig into the listener mailbag.
Guys, let's open up the mailbag here to end the show. We are going to try and hit on more of these as the draft season rolls on future podcast episodes. But if listeners want even more access to our analysts, be sure to join us on Discord at fantasypros.com/chat. A premium subscription will get listeners full access to all of our analysts through AMAs, stages, and more. Let's start with at JPWeb321 asks, in my PPR home league, which has a double flex spot, there are a lot of people that he thinks will prioritize wide receiver to a degree that they probably shouldn't be in the first two rounds. He's wondering if in that scenario, should he zig while they zag and go for two top running backs, but risk missing out on the top 15 or so wide receivers completely. Pat, I'll start with you.
To me, it totally depends on whether he's required to start two or three wide receivers minimum. Like if you're required to start three and then with the two flex spots can start either four or five, like I don't think you should start running back. I think you have to like get a really top wide receiver in that situation. But if it's two wide receivers and then you could, you know, flex up to two running backs, then go for it. But I think with three wide receivers, like I wouldn't want to be weak at that position.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You know, I still think if you are drafting in the top four or five slots, I think it still behooves you to start with one of those elite running backs just because there are so few of them. But I think Pat's right. If you're starting three wide receivers, you want to make sure in the first couple rounds, you at least get one elite wide receiver. It's a deep position, but if everybody's going that way, it will hollow out really quickly.
Another strategy mailbag question here from at @just_Joshin2. We've all heard about zero or hero RB strategies, but could zero or hero wide receiver be a viable strategy this year? Seems like the depth is there. To me, I'll just answer this one first. I don't really think that would be smart because the whole point of zero or hero RB is you're not tapping into that high-end depth. And if there is so much of that for the receivers, I wouldn't want to miss out on that. But that's just me. Marcus, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I just... I don't know. It just feels so deep, right? That it just doesn't really seem to make sense. The whole point of zero RB, as you mentioned, is sort of to take advantage of the fragility of the running back position. Because wide receivers are so deep across the league, you see all that opportunity generally spread out. So maybe there's a couple of teams that you could do. I don't know. Maybe you could do that with, say, like the Vikings or something like that in the event that like an Adam Thielen or Justin Jefferson goes down. I guess a BC Johnson steps in. But it just seems like there's so much depth across the league that you can't really necessarily count on that potential fragility or injury or anything like that to take advantage of.
Pat, what about you?
Marcus pretty much nailed it. I mean, we see the nature of those two positions is just so different. And we see running backs come out of the fog every year, like guys who are just like who aren't even in your top 100 right now are going to inspire bidding wars on the waiver wire. And, you know, guys we just couldn't possibly ID. A couple injuries happen and all of a sudden this guy who was like seemingly a fourth stringer is getting a lot of opportunity. Whereas at wide receiver, I think you generally what you pay for is what you get. So, yeah, I think Mark has pretty much nailed that about the different natures of the two positions.
Last mailbag question here at @CoachSanford66 asks, a league he's in got rid of the tight end position and added another flex instead. He hates it, disagrees strongly. They still play a kicker and a defense, but no tight end. Is he wrong for making a big deal out of it, Marcus?
No, I don't think so. although I would say this, like, you know, if you don't start a tight end, if you can still flex a tight end, I mean, I still think that keeps guys like, you know, Kelsey, Andrews, Pitts, Kittle. I think those guys are still very much in play. That sort of made my brain itch. You got rid of tight ends, but you kept kickers in defense. I'm trying to wrap my head around that one.
Yeah, right, I'm now. Not opposed in a vacuum to moving away from tight ends and including them in the flex position. But yeah, it's just so odd to start with that if you're cutting out positions and not defense or kicker. Pat, what do you think?
Yeah, is this a total ban? Are they eligible wide receiver? Are the tight ends just outside the window looking in, wanting to get in on things? Like Travis Kelce isn't in the league. So I'm sure he didn't elaborate on that. But it is a little odd. I'm kind of with him in complaining about that format. I like the tight ends.
Guys, one thing I love to do when we have a little time at the end of the show is sprinkle in one quick pop culture question. Today, I'm going to keep it simple and just ask, what is your favorite movie that you've seen this calendar year? If for some reason you haven't seen any movies, you can feel free to throw in a TV show instead. But the question is for movies. I didn't give you guys, you know, prep on this question, so I will go first. The very easy answer for me is Top Gun Maverick. It's one of the best movies I've seen in theaters, not just this year, but in years. I thought it was fantastic. Everything I wanted a sequel to be. So that would be my easy choice. Marcus?
So I haven't seen Top Gun yet because I've heard nothing but great things about it. So I'm going to go with Spider-Man No Way Home. Partially because I'm just a Spider-Man fanatic anyway. Miles Morales is sort of my spirit animal, but I just, I always love a good Spider-Man story. I'm also a sucker for multiverse and parallel universe stories. And just the way they sort of tied in all of the different Spider-Man movies. I mean, we literally live in a world with three Spider-Man trilogies now, and the way they tied all of those into kind of a multiverse theory was very, very entertaining, very satisfying, and really ranks up there, I think, in the pantheon of Marvel movies so far.
The first PG-13 movie I ever saw, my dad took me to see the first Spider-Man. And it was so just seeing Tobey Maguire like walk out. Like, obviously, I knew it was coming, but yeah, that was a pretty special moment. I thought that was a fantastic movie as well. Pat?
I'm so lame. I think I've only seen one new movie in the theater this entire year. I've been going to this series of like classic movies at the theater. So I've seen at the theater this year, what, Casablanca, ooh, Smokey and the Bandit, The Thing, and what was the other one? Oh, and The Big Lebowski. So quite an eclectic combination there. And the only new movie I've seen at the theater this year is Minions Rise of Gru. So so I guess by default that was the best.
One of the best MCU movies of all time, one of the best sequels I've ever seen, and Minions.
Let's just go with Big Lebowski, because like you can never go wrong with the dude.
I'm with Marcus. Yeah,
that was much. But I will say also that my backup choice was Everything Everywhere All at Once. Marcus, you talked about multiverse movies. That's one of the best multiverse type, idea movies that I have ever seen. So let's wrap it up there. Thanks so much for a great show, guys. And thanks to the listeners for sticking with us all the way to the end. Please remember to take advantage of all of our great offers, including your free credit at Pristine Auction with promo code FANTASYPROS, and hosting your draft party at Buffalo Wild Wings by booking at buffalowildwings.com/fantasy. Most of all, thank you, the listeners. For Marcus and Pat, I'm Ryan Wormley. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge Podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
to the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.